Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast, hosted by Renita Ray Davis, licensed clinical social worker, board-approved social work clinical supervisor, and facilitator of the Goddesses of Social Work supervision community. Join us as we travel through the social work journeys told by the Goddesses of Social Work community members, past and present, as they make their way toward clinical licensure.
Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. On today's episode, Veronica Haynes-Knowles, LCSW, joins the show. Veronica Haynes-Knowles, LCSW, was born and raised in Louisville, Mississippi. Veronica earned an undergraduate degree from the University of Mississippi and a Master of Social Work from the University of Alabama. Professionally, Veronica is a licensed certified social worker supervisor. She has over 20 years of professional social work experience in healthcare, child welfare, administration, and mental health. She currently works full-time as an award-winning instructor of social work at Mississippi State University, and she owns a small private practice providing clinical supervision, consulting, and mental health services. Veronica has been married to the handsome Kelvin Knowles for 18 years, and they have a six-year-old daughter. When not working, Veronica enjoys spending time with family, reading, attending sporting events, and traveling. She is a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated. Welcome to the show, Veronica.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited about being here.
Yay, I'm so glad you said yes. Veronica, I absolutely love your bio. The part that I love the most is award-winning social work instructor. Do tell, what award have you won? And what do you believe it takes to become an award-winning social work instructor?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So if I'm really honest, the award-winning part, those words were not my own because I'm just a little girl from East Central Mississippi, right? And we don't talk about ourselves like that as social workers or, you know, by all means, humble me. But I was working on my packet for promotion a year ago or so. And one of my colleagues was like, hey, you won an award. You need to say you are an award-winning social work instructor. So I was like, okay, well, that does sound pretty good. So I stole it, right? But I did win. I am in the sociology department. The social work program is nestled in the sociology department in the College of Arts and Sciences. And a couple years ago, I won an award for instructor of behavior sciences for the college. And so it was a big deal. It was a big deal for me, right? Because I just kind of go and do what I'm supposed to do and like what I do. And so I do my best. But nonetheless, my colleagues and students alike nominated me for the award and had some very glowing things to say about me. And I'm humbled. But yeah, that's it.
I love that. And I love that you said that because that I think that's why it was my favorite part, because there's award-winning this and award-winning that, but we never hear award-winning social work anything. And so yeah. I wanted to pump you up even more because I was like, yes, award-winning social work instructor. And you said you just do your thing. So what is your thing that so many people took note and thought that you deserve that title, award-winning social work instructor?
Well, thank you. I just, you know, I believe in doing my best with everything that I do, and doing my best, but also being genuine, being real. And I think when we practice being genuine, being real, and just being our authentic selves, the best kind of just shows up. And I would like to believe that somebody said, hey, this chick is doing her thing. She is just being herself, and they liked it. And I think the students I think they appreciate me being authentic, the realness of who I am. And that's one of the things that, you know, life has kind of taught me to just be you, right? You can't be anybody else, be you. And I kind of like me. You know, I've grown to like me. So it's just too much work trying to be somebody else. So I'm just gonna be me. Like it, love it, or leave it, kind of like Cold Stone ice cream, you know, like it, love it, gotta have it. But I'm just gonna be myself. And that is, I love people, you know, people. People are people, and I just love people. And I want to see people win. And I think that has been one of the things that has came through even in my teaching.
Oh, that's so good. You know what? We talk a lot about authenticity on the podcast because I believe in that too. And one of the things that I feel very strongly about is when we show up with our clients, with our students, with our supervisees as our authentic self, then they get to do so as well, right?
Absolutely.
And we model that. So the fact that your students are noting that and that you're showing up as you and being you, they're going to get to practice that as well, right?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
So too,
And
right?
it's a process, right? Because it's I can't tell you that I've always been or I've never had those moments where I had some insecurities, right? And that's the human part of us. We at times have some insecurities. But even when I don't feel it's or I'm not confident, it's okay, right? Just be me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And if I
And I
don't
think
know, I just don't know.
right. And I think too, especially because both of us have had 20 plus year career in social work. And to hear us talk about, I still get scared, I still get nervous. I think when you stop getting nervous and when you stop being scared, it's probably time to hang up the hat. Because being scared, being nervous gives you a little bit of angst, a little anxiety to do and show up and do your absolute best.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that. So good. Veronica, tell us a little bit about your social work journey. How did you get here and where are you going with this?
Well, you know, I really don't know what I want to do when I grow up. But what I will tell you is, I've invested a lot, to be a social worker, as I'm sure you and everybody else, right? Because we had to pay for this. We had to pay for this. But with social work, I absolutely love being a social worker. I cannot imagine doing anything else. And so I think that is, I'm grateful for that because I know people who are in roles and it's just wait until I can get retirement, until I can get retirement. I often joke, I don't think I'll ever retire because I want to do this and I want to do this. But me, if I told you growing up at five, I knew I wanted to be a social worker, I would not be being honest with you. I didn't know. I knew I wanted to be in a helping profession. And I kind of stumbled on social work. But I remember my first social work class. And I was like, oh, this makes sense. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. And it just everything just aligned. And it was like stars and fireworks in my head. It just made sense. But as a social worker, I've done a lot of stuff. And it is not because I job hop. It is because I probably had more than one job at a time. So that's why the resume is so large. But I remember starting off, I worked in rape crisis and advocacy work and health education. And then I went to graduate school and I did child protective services and I did investigations in Alabama, a place that I had never heard of before. And then I dabbled in mental health as a part-time gig. And I've done it. Done home health, dialysis, administration in a hospital. One of the jobs that was just near and dear to my heart and just opened a whole new world of love for me is I worked in administration with people Well, for people with intellectual disabilities. And when you want to talk about love and just, that heart kind of thing, that is it. I mean, that is my heart. And then I was also teaching adjunct at the time, and I worked community mental health, and my agency with IDD, it was a state school. They were coming from under the umbrella of being a state agency, or my programs were to going back under the community mental health center. And I just was not interested in doing that anymore. And just something happened, and a full-time instructor role came available. I applied, and here I am. And I'm doing that. And I absolutely love the classroom. I thought that from the beginning, because I had some wonderful instructors, undergraduate and graduate, I always said, hey, you know what? I want to be like Kim Shackelford. I want to be like Deborah Moore one day. But I didn't think it would come so early. But when the opportunity presented itself, who was I to say not right now? So I kind of just jumped in on it and love it. And so one of the things that, because I was not expecting this to come so early, and my life situations kind of, aligned with it, and it made sense to do it right then, I still was not ready to just leave practice and be, Professor Knowles full time. I don't know if my passion or my ADHD wouldn't allow that. So I still practice a little bit, especially in the summer. I still practice a little bit. But being in academia has also given me the ability to do some service work that I am so passionate about. I am on Mississippi Board of Examiners for Social Workers and Marriage and Family Therapists, and I'm also on a pra on the Practice Analysis Task Force for ASWB. Yeah, that's who I am and how I got to where I am.
I love it. And I'm going to come back to your role as a practice analyzer at ASWB, but I want to go all the way back to how did you land in that first social work class? I heard you say you stumbled into social work, and I'm like, okay, but how?
A new helping profession, and in my mind, I thought maybe psychology, clinical psych for, giving myself options because I'm a girl with who likes options, right? I thought, well, I think I kind of want to go to law school and do family law and kind of help with that. So I'll get an undergraduate in psych, and if I'm not ready to go to law school, I can do clinical psych and do therapy. But I had some good advisors in undergraduate because I'm first gen college, and so I just had some good advisors who said, all right, well, you know what? Social work is related to psychology. Why don't you take that course and it'll double as an elective? Well, I was doing just that and fell in love with it. So that's how I stumbled on it.
I love that. My social work 101 class, I was like, oh, I'm home. It felt like home. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And I had changed my major 5 times. I don't think you can do that anymore. But when I took that social work 101 class, I was like, oh, this is where I was supposed to be. So I totally get that. But you said you didn't know anything about the University of Alabama and Roll Tide, by the way. How did you find out? How did you end up with going to Tuscaloosa?
Well, I knew about the University of Alabama. My first job out of graduate school, I moved to a place in Alabama that I didn't know anything about. So let me just say this. Roll Tide second to Hotty Toddy, okay? I'm just not and third, we could say Hail State. But right, first is Hotty Toddy. Okay, let's just make that clear.
I love it. Yeah.
So the University of Alabama, I was familiar with it, but my mind wasn't thinking social work. And so I was Again, when I switched over to social work and stayed there, and I was like, this is it. It makes all the sense. Like, stuff just started to happen. It was just making sense. And I still thought, well, you know, I do want to go to law school. And Ole Miss had a law program, a really good law program. And I did very well in my social work courses. And the time came where it was like, it's time to graduate, you know? And I was like, okay, I'm ready to graduate, but I'm still not ready to go to law school. So I stayed in Oxford a year and worked my first social work job at an agency that I was volunteering with, Rape Crisis. And I said, you know what? I'm going to give myself some time and I'm going to work a full-time adult job and I'm going to prepare for law school. Well, let's just say I worked my full-time adult job, but I was so used to working and going to school that all I was doing now is working. And this is boring. I mean, adulting sucks. so I got bored. And so in the afternoons, I enrolled in a graduate program at the University of Mississippi. And it was a counseling psych or ed psych program because, hey, let's just make the most of my time. I don't need all this idle time. And that would give me some time to still get ready for law school. Well, I did well in those classes. And then I said, well, you know what? I still don't think law school is what I need to do right now. But I don't want to waste time or money in this program because I was doing well and I finished that semester. I said, but if I'm going to continue to do this and if I'm going to go to graduate school, social work is what I need to do because it just made sense. Yeah, I could have did counseling with that, but social work, one of the beautiful things about social work is you just don't have to do counseling. And so I like options. I told you I'm a girl with op who likes options. And so I was like, well, hey, let me at least apply for some MSW programs and I can always come back to law school. And so that's what I did. And I got accepted into a few, and the University of Alabama just made sense. And I went over to Tuscaloosa and fell in love.
Absolutely. Yes, I fell in love too. Love it. I wanted to lean in. There was a couple of questions I have. So many questions. One, and this is an unexpected one. You said that your first job you are volunteering at, and I think we minimize within our profession the importance and the benefits of students coming out of, college volunteering and how that can lead to, if not in the agency you're volunteering in, but it can lead to employment and or networking and or, all of the things. And I guess I wanted to ask you, can you talk about the benefit of volunteering as part of your career growth?
Absolutely. So I started volunteering at this agency in undergraduate. And I can't remember if it was service learning or if the volunteer coordinator came to one of our classes. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. And I did it. And I volunteered. And again, it was one of those things where I did it and I did as much of it as I could because I'm an all or nothing kind of girl. And so I liked it and I got volunteer of the month a couple of times. But I'm thinking, hey, that is nothing. I'm just doing what I do. You know, if you need somebody to take phone calls, hey, I'll do it. If you need somebody to do this, I'll do it. I'm not doing anything else. Why not? I just thought, hey, that's what people did. And then it came time to do field placement. And I did field placement there. Again, not thinking that this was going to lead to something else, I just thought, why not? Hey, let's just do it. And then a position became available, and I'm like, and somebody encouraged me, you should apply. And I'm like, okay, why not? You know? And I applied, and it was not one of those things that I thought, hey, listen, you have volunteered here. You did field placement here. Like, this job is yours. I didn't think that. I just thought, okay, well, I'll apply and give it my best. And I applied and went through the process. And this is my first social work job. And so I went out and shopped for an outfit to volunteer, I mean, to interview with. I did all of the stuff and I got the job. And it was just, but I do think that everything happens for a reason. And I think as a student, oftentimes they minimize the exposure or those assignments or the just resources that are at their fingertips as students, whether that be each other, whether it be the professors or just different organizations and things and course expectations, just so much students have. But yeah, I think students need to just tap into every resource and just make the most of it. Show up, always be yourself, always do the best at whatever you do because you don't know what the future holds.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what I loved about besides the volunteering part and how it can lead to so many other great things and pay attention to those opportunities, social workers. But one of the things that I loved, and you've been winning awards since the beginning. Just
You're
doing
being
what you
nice.
love to do. No, I'm you're just volunteer of the month. I bet you even won employee of the month, but you've been winning awards since the beginning. I'm curious, Veronica, can you talk to us a little bit about your clinical license, your journey, and then maybe that will lead into your role now as practice analysis?
So, yeah, again, one of those things I thought, if I'm going to do social work, I'm going to do social work all the way, right? So from the beginning, even BSW Veronica thought, well, if I'm going to do social work, I got to get a master's. And, 20 years ago, we didn't have as many options in for graduate programs as students have now. And I thought, well, you know what? If I'm going to get a BSW, then I'm going to get an MSW once I started that path. And if I'm going to get an MSW, I'm going to get licensed at the highest level just because, right? It's just what you do. It's, I think it's just who I am. Go big or go home. And so from the minute I passed my MSW exam, I thought, well, now you need to start looking for a supervisor. And in Mississippi, you have to have a board-approved supervisor. And not everybody is, not everybody wants to be. And so I started looking. And I was working in community mental health when I passed my mental, when I passed my LMSW. And I had been promised a job pretty much in healthcare once I got my license. And so I remember taking my test and passing it. And that day I called the recruiter and I was like, hey, I passed my test. And she said, when do you want to start? So I put in probably a month notice with community mental health. I put in my month notice. And I started working in dialysis. And from the beginning, I was like, okay, I'm looking for a supervisor. And so I found a supervisor who was willing to take me on, but I probably had been working in dialysis a year before we went into clinical supervision. And I finished it, and I didn't take my test. Just because life was lifing and I got busy and I was complacent and I didn't take my test. It was a few years I had finished supervision before I took my test. And so finally I paid for the test, I took the test and I got it, but I was no longer working in dialysis. I had transitioned into a role, a mental health role, mental health therapist role where they wanted an LCSW. But they would take somebody who was in supervision. So it was never a push for me to finish and hurry up and get my license because I had already gone through that 2 years of supervision. And so that job kind of ended. Like I don't know if the company went belly up or what, but it ended. And so I took some time. My husband said, hey, this was before we had a child. Hey, why don't you just take some time and figure out what you want to do. You've never done that. And I'm like, okay. All right. He said, don't look for a job. Just kind of take some time. And, you know, if you want to volunteer, volunteer and, you know, just do that. And so that's what I did. I volunteered enough to be full time at some places. And then I still was doing some PRN work. And I figured out that I wanted to go back to state service and just from the beginning, like I wanted to go back to the beginning of social work for me. And so I went back to work for Child Protection Services in Mississippi. And I had the test was already paid for, and I had scheduled it and rescheduled it and rescheduled it until the place where I couldn't reschedule it anymore because my time was about to expire. And so I was forced to take the test, and I took it and I passed it. And yeah, I did. And I was LCSW, but I was not in a role that required an LCSW. I was in a role that pretty much you can be a licensed bachelor's level social work. But hey, I was happy. I was doing what I was doing. And that was that. And so from there, I was fine. Like things were great. But I was recruited to come work for the Department of Mental Health. Or told that I should apply, right? Let's just say that. I was told that I should apply. And I applied for a position, and that's when I became the administrator for the one of the state school IDD programs, separate programs. And so that's what I did. And again, a job that did not require LCSW, but LCSW made sense. And so I was doing it, and I had more of my LCSW required jobs were more PRN, part-time side hustle jobs. And then I rocked on and I did it and I did it. And people just, hey, you're LCSW. Why don't you be my clinical supervisor? Why don't you be my supervisor? Why don't you be my supervisor? I'll pay you. I'll pay you. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'll get to it. I'll get to it. And then finally, I did it. I took the courses that I needed to take and I did it. And I started doing my clinical supervision, and I had a perfect model because my clinical supervisor, when I tell you what, who she was the epitome of an organized guru, like Latanya Hobson, she was my clinical supervisor. When I tell you the first time I met her, for clinical supervision, she had a binder with everything that I thought I would need for clinical supervision, calendars, meeting dates. And so that was kind of my path. And I was like, okay, if I can just do a little bit of what Latanya did, because I cannot be Latanya Hobson, but if I can be a little bit like Latanya, I'll be fine. And that's what I've used. And so far, it's been really, really good. I have been clinical supervisor for some people who I want to be like them now, right? Yeah, I want to be like them because they are doing the thing. Yeah.
It's been such an honor being a clinical supervisor. I'm like you. I have some folks that either I taught and or supervised. Then I'm like, oh, now you're my role model. So
I know,
yeah.
right?
Yes. I love that. Veronica, what do you think the energy was around you continuing to put the test off? Like, were you hearing what was that energy about that you kept putting the test off?
Part of it, I was very nervous, right? Because I didn't want to fail. And also, I was not being forced to do it, meaning I was in a role where it was not required and nothing really would change. And I was okay there. So just being complacent. I was not in a role where it said, hey, you need to be a clinical supervisor. I mean, you need to be an LCSW. You need to be an LCSW. And life was happening for me. And so it was just one thing that I didn't have to focus on.
I love that. We can talk about complacency too, right? But then you can still do it. Don't ever think you can't do it. You can do it. Yeah.
Right.
I want to jump into, well, before we get in, I know I keep saying we're going to talk about the practice analysis because I do, but I also think something within your social work journey is so important. You are teaching at the university level without a doctorate. And a lot, I did that as well. And a lot of people think that you have to have your DSW or PhD to teach. And I wanted to know if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, so I am an instructor, and so I am non-tenure track, and I am okay with that, right? That means I don't have to do research. My job is to come in, teach really good, and teach, right? I have some service added to it now, but I was hired on just to teach, right? And I like that because I'm not in that publish or perish, right? And for those who do that, kudos to them. But I don't, that's not an interest of mine. And so I have an MSW, but I will tell you this, my experience or our experience, because we've worked in the field, and social work is one of those careers where we are hand and feet and boot to the ground kind of people. We get things done. It's not all about a theory. We are working with real people in real situations. And in academia, there's a place for that. There's a place for our experience. We can bring some things to the classroom that eight PhDs can't. And so I'm not intimidated by that. That's just not an interest of mine right now. I don't know if it ever will be. I'm not going to say no, never, because I just think that's a way that I jinx myself. So I don't want to say that. But right now, I have no interest in that. And I'm fine where I am. I teach. I do my best at teaching. I do my best at service. And with service, a lot of the service things are things that I was just doing anyway, or I would have done anyway, but it's just because of who I am. So no, I'm good with that.
Absolutely. And I love that you said, because I agree with you. Plus, you're an award-winning instructor, by the way,
Oh,
for
that part, right?
yes,
And
that,
then
yes,
my
that's
students told
the,
me, "Hey, you know, you are 5 stars on Rate My Professor." So I forget to throw that part in. I'm 5 stars, okay?
yes. I think it is so important for us to model, celebrating our wins, because we have been taught not to do so. And so when, social workers who are coming behind us, let poo-poo their wins away, we don't get a lot in social work, a lot of recognition and acknowledgement for the hard work that we do. So when we have
Right.
opportunities to do so, I'm like, yes, 5-star instructor. Yes, award-winning social work professor. Toot your horn. Yes. All right, now I'm going to get into the practice analysis of ASWB. We were talking a little bit offline about the pass rate for brown and black women with the scores. I know that you have your own thoughts. I would love to hear all about that. And what is this role you play on the ASWB with the ASWB?
So ASWB, released the data a couple years ago that, and it showed, hey, listen, for some reason, black and brown people are not doing as well on this exam, right? And yeah. And hey, we've all heard it. Hey, it's something, it's something, it's something. And then also the sad part about it is a lot of people measured how good or how prepared a social worker was or any professional is by a test. That's not it, right? The test is a measurement, perhaps, but it does not say how good that you are or will be as a social worker. What it measures is base level competency, right? But we all know that, hey, for whatever reason, that there are some biases even in translation, right? I'm seeing that now with my 6-year-old and our homework and homework we're getting. Certain things mean things mean a certain thing to her because of who we are and our lived experiences. And maybe to her teacher, it's something completely different. And I think maybe that is some of the thing with the test. But the Practice Analysis Task Force, we are a group a very diverse group, I must say. It's a very diverse group from all over the United States, the US territories, Canada, who come together, and we are looking at the skills that are measured on this test, and we're figuring out, we're looking at, hey, does, for example, I'm on the bachelor's level. Is this something that a bachelor's level person needs to know with no experience? And we're looking at that to say, hey, listen, we shouldn't test these people on this. This is not need to know. This is not bachelor's level. Maybe it's master's level. Or what is the base level of competency? And so I'm on that. And I have learned a lot about this testing process, but I've also learned a lot about ASWB. And I am grateful for ASWB releasing this data, but I don't want us social workers to say, aha, I told you something was up with this, and let's jump off and let's just throw away the test and everybody can be licensed. I don't think that's the answer either, right? But I also know that, hey, social work, ASWB released this, but what about the other professions? We've not, you know, before we, you know, throw away this for social work and say, hey, it shouldn't be a test. Everybody who graduates, because we've worked so hard as a profession to be recognized as professionals, then I think throwing away the test is taking a step back, right? We're still fighting for livable wages as social workers, right? I mean, I've had clients who say, hey, listen, are they hiring down there where you work at? Because I think I can do what you do. Really? And so I think, you know, that's where we are. That's where we are. But yeah, that's what I do with ASWB.
I appreciate that work. I'm so glad that, because it is volunteer. I was talking to a social worker recently. The macro work we do, for those of us who, well, you're a professor, so that's meso macro as well. But most of the macro work we do not get paid for. So
nope.
I just want to acknowledge and tell you how much I appreciate you, beautiful Black woman, being on this diverse ASWB committee as we work through one of the toughest crises we've had in social work in a while. So, but yeah, I agree with you. I think that the test is important, but we just got to do a better job of administering it.
Thank you. And I will like to say that there is new leadership with ASWB. And I think that they are, and I'm not saying this because I am on Practice Analysis Task Force. I'm also a board member with Mississippi Board of Examiners. I'm not saying this in any of that, but I have learned so much. And the time, the energy, and the financial investment that ASWB is putting forth to make sure that this is a test for everyone, I'm so grateful for that. And I think we will see some things change in the very near future. Even now, things are changing. Testing is being reformed and is being translated in other languages. Eventually, we'll be able to test in a environment that's more relaxed, whether that be at home under proctored and proctored. And so I think they're putting forth great efforts. And so if we can just hold on as professionals, remain professional, and just don't make some knee-jerk decisions, I think we'll be okay.
Completely agree. Thank you so much for sharing that. That was unexpected gem today in our interview. So I appreciate that. I am going to move away from your social work journey. Thank you so much. I enjoyed listening to that. But a big reason I wanted to do this podcast was to promote the importance of being in community with other social workers. What social work communities and our communities do you belong to that have social workers? And what have you learned about yourself being in community?
So when it comes to my social work communities, I think one of the communities, again, that a lot of times we don't tap into or see as a community are our colleagues, And the knowledge and the wisdom and the camaraderie that we share with our colleagues, right? Again, I told you earlier that my colleague, that social work program, we're a small program nestled inside of sociology, within the College of Arts and Sciences. And even in 2024, we struggle with a lot of people really not knowing who social workers are or what we do. We hear people say, oh, social work, you just take people's kids, right? And so that can be very daunting and just tiring. Always trying to defend what you do, why you believe the way you do, and why you do some of the things and why you even think the way you do. So the community that I have with my colleagues, and then the community with other social workers with similar lived experiences, Black and Brown social workers. I am in a few of the groups on social media, especially I know a couple of them are Black Girls in Social Work or mental health, Black clinicians in mental health. But that is community. These are people who get it, right? Who understand. Because, you know, even if I came home, my husband works in healthcare. He didn't always get, right? Get it, right? Oh, there you go, Rock. You want to fix everybody, you know? Come, you want to hug on everybody. You want to make, you see the best in everybody. They don't always get it. So I think my community is super important. That and then NASW. I'm very involved with the NASW chapter here in Mississippi. And also the community of, hey, listen, my hometown is not a lot of us social workers here. And so oftentimes, hey, I'm taking the time to answer a question for somebody or direct resources, you know, direct somebody into those resources. Just because, hey, this is about me, but it's bigger than me, right? It's the community. And we can be a part of the community and make the community better, or we're a liability. Right. And so I believe in, hey, if I got to be here, I want it to be the best. Right. And what can I do to make things better? What can I do things to make things better at home, at work, at school, with my groups on social media or wherever? What can I do to make things better?
Absolutely. Love that. We're social workers. That's what we do. Everywhere we go, we make things better. Yes. Veronica, what is one belief about social work that you started on this journey with that you feel has changed the most?
One belief about social work that I think has changed the most. Well, I'm going to say this. I think one belief is, I'm going to say this, and it's going to sound a lot different than I mean. You know, I remember hearing, you know, you're not here for the money. And I'm not here for the money. But the money is important. And there is money in social work. There is money. You don't have to be a poor social worker. There's money out here and it's enough for everybody. And so while I'm not here for the money, if it don't make dollars, it don't make sense.
The math ain't mathin'.
Math ain't mathin'.
It's not. You know what? You must not have listened to this podcast because so many folks have said that there is money to be made in social work. You kind of have to put yourself out there a little bit, but there is definitely money to be made in social work. And so I'm so glad you're on board with that consensus. That's so good. Veronica, we're actually coming to the end of our time together, and I've so enjoyed this conversation. I've learned a lot today. But when I was reflecting on all you've accomplished in your 20 plus year career in social work, the words that came to mind were steady, dependable, consistent. And I was wondering, what advice do you have for social workers who would like to experience longevity within our profession?
I think that's a very good question. And let me just say, I have thoroughly enjoyed my time with you. You've social worked me real good. But I will say that one of the things that I have lived by is people are people. And I'm here today. I don't know where I'll be tomorrow. And so if you treat people like people, it comes around. And I always tell my students, it's you on this side of the desk today. You can be on that side tomorrow. So treat people on this side like people and like the people you would like to be treated like if you were in that situation. And that's just one of those things I've kind of lived by, even, in social work and just dealing with people, right? And that has kept me humble and kept me grounded, right? I don't want to, I don't want ever hear anybody say, well, you know what? You could have helped me, but you didn't, right? You could have said something, but you didn't. And so I think in this career, in any career, I want to be able to sleep at night knowing that I did all that I could, right? I worked hard as I could. I did what I needed to do. I worked hard so I can play hard. So I can rest hard, right? And I think that's the key to consistency and longevity. Because this was an investment, right? Me becoming a social worker, like I had to pay for this. Let me say that again. I had to pay for this. And I wanted to pay off, right? I don't want to get tired and burn out and, I'm an old woman with a young baby. This has got to last a little while longer. And so I want to do my best. I want to do my best by people. I want to do my best by my profession, but I also want to do my best for myself. And if that means making sure that I treat people right so I can rest at night, then that's what I'm gonna do.
Absolutely. I used to say, I still say that we are all just one decision away from being on the other side of the table.
Say it again for the people in
Right?
the back.
Right? Exactly. And so, yes,
Yeah.
I love that so
Yeah.
much. And Veronica, thank you so much for being on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. This was such a joy, and I really did learn a lot. And thank you. You said you worked at Department of Human Resources. I forget if that's what they call it in your state, but I always want to thank those who do that work. It's such important work, and you guys get such a bad rap sometimes. And so it's almost like military service to me. I'm just like, thank you for
Yeah.
doing that work because it is such important work.
Well, thank you, Goddess, for creating such a platform. This is beautiful. Thank you so very much. And this has been awesome, an awesome experience. You took my podcast virginity.
Love it.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. We are glad you were here. If you liked this episode, please come back to hear more stories of the journeys through social work, and please leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. See you next time here on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast.